Draft week is finally here, which means, and I'm thrilled to be saying this, which means an end to mock drafts, speculation, rumors, everyone reporting kind of the same things, and teams trying to lie, although some better at it than others. All that is over. We are now at the 2024 NFL Draft, and of course, so much more going on around the region in the sports world, but what's happening with the Pittsburgh Steelers and leading up to the NFL Draft will take center stage on this episode of Mic Drop, powered by the Believe Network and available everywhere you get your podcasts, Apple, Google Play, TuneIn, etc. Also giving a shout out to any of our Sirius satellite channels that do carry this show and many others throughout the Believe Network. And on this show, I am going to talk about the NFL Draft, what the Steelers are going to do, what maybe I and my guests think they should do, some rumors there, which are legitimate, maybe even get into a player that I cover professionally, a West Virginia product in Zach Frazier, who's been tied to the Steelers for months, and everyone talks about how much Mike Tomlin and company love him. Will that actually happen? We may also get into some of the Pittsburgh Penguins commentary from last week that we touched on and how that will continue in throughout the offseason. What Mike Sullivan's future maybe will be, what that roster maybe will look like, how to evaluate this past season as it was kind of a roller coaster ride. And maybe if there's time, I will ask my guest his thoughts about the Pittsburgh Pirates. But before any of that happens, I will now bring on my guest, and that is Will Graves with the Associated Press. I actually just saw Will Graves a little less than a week ago as he spoke to a class of mine that I do teach at WVU as an adjunct. So, Will, how are you? And how was that experience for you to speak to the
next? I'm good. It was, I'll give you credit for, I had a plan and okay. I like actually took notes and it was not going to do my old man yelling at cloud routine. Yeah. And then, you know, you had your, Mike does an engagement thing early in class to get his students to talk about, you know, current events and sort of sports. We talked about the Caitlin Clark, Greg Doyle press conference thing, and that sort of got us down a wormhole that I ended up racing through instead. But that's okay. I mean, I love to talk about the profession, and it was a joy for me. I don't know if it was a joy for the kids. I think if it had been like a Tuesday in February when it was 42 degrees and raining, they probably would have been a little more engaged. But to do it on an 80-degree day in late in the semester is kind of hard to get the kids' attention, but it was great. And as I told them, I hope they remember me when they're hiring in 10 years and I'm looking for work. So,
yeah. And it also probably didn't help that I did tell them beforehand that here are all the assignments. Here's what I graded. We're kind of done for the semester, which we are. But yeah, I think it worked out nonetheless. And I did kind of think that what happened with Caitlin Clark kind of teed you up. I was even thinking to myself the night before, like, this is just fastball down the middle for Will Graves. We are going to go off the rails. So we did, but that was fine. Again, Will Graves with the Associated Press. As we are talking Steelers NFL draft, maybe getting into West Virginia, as we are both WVU alums and I cover the Mountaineers, maybe Penguins, etc. here on Mic Drop. So Will, you were just talking to Mike Tomlin at his press conference of sorts leading up to the NFL draft. I do miss talking to Mike T. But obviously you never can right home exactly with what he says verbatim. A lot of it is for show, as we've talked about. But what did you take away from what Mike Tomlin had to say? I did see some comments about the receiver room, people thinking he's going to go there again after the Deontay Johnson trade. They usually do early in the rounds. He did talk about the center position, which leads into Frazier again. They have pick 20, then they have 51. Many of us believe if they want to take some of these guys, they're going to have to move around. They can't sit at 51 in particular. But did you take anything out of what Mike Tomlin had to say? How do you read into his words?
Well, you know, I think, you know, I tweeted out the Marshawn Lynch gif after he was done that, you know, he and Omar were there just so they didn't get fined, right? I mean, I think that there's, you know, they're never going to come out. I've been doing this a while now. That, you know, these things are sort of time killers. That being said, you know, I think there's just a lot of obfuscation with every NFL team. I mean, they're not going to come out and say, hey, you know, we like this guy at 20, but if we move up, we like this guy. That being said, I mean, the big takeaway was they don't feel like they have any major pressing needs. I would argue a little bit, but they did. I mean, you know, like they had brought in cornerbacks. They've addressed inside linebacker. They've brought in, you know, safeties. They brought in wide receivers. So it's not like there's not anybody on the roster that can play these positions. The thing is, are those guys the guys that can help them close the gap on the Kansas Cities and the Buffaloes of the world, which is really what this season is about. So, I mean, the shortest answer would be, the stuff that I thought was the most interesting was they talked about their options at center on the roster. James Daniels has played some, Nate Herbig has played some center. Those guys are guards by position. They talked about not limiting themselves to centers only. I think that's a flat out lie. I think they are flat out fibbing. I think that what happened with Kendrick Green, where they tried to make him a center, you know, they tabbed him, a guy who played guard in college, had played some center, but wasn't a center. And then they try to, you know, force him in there and it didn't work out. I think they've learned their lesson. I think they're going to go get a pure center in the draft.
And that could certainly be the case. Obviously you're looking at Powers Johnson, Zach Frazier, et cetera, that could be around certainly the first round. We'll see what they do if they do pull the trigger. Obviously that pick would be early for where centers normally go. Do you have any feeling for if this offseason, if the future of the Steelers brass now with Omar Khan in charge, if this draft is going to pave the way for this different Steeler mindset that some fans are talking about? And the reason why I ask that, obviously you've been covering for a long time, so have I. Kevin Colbert, he tipped his hand. Okay, they're not going to tell you what we're going to take this guy, but you could easily read the tea leaves even if you were not covering the team. Everybody and their brother knew Najee Harris was coming. Kenny Pickett, they were in love with. If he would fall, they would take him, even though the only quarterback in that first round. I could go way further back. It does feel like they're not trying to tip their hand as much now as you're talking about, but they did switch up the entire quarterback room. Didn't feel like too much of a Kevin Colbert thing, even though low risk, you could argue off of the Russ money and the what they had to give up for Justin Fields. Is all of that going to segue for you into a little different situation with Omar Khan in charge that we can't all say they're the Steelers, they don't have fun, this isn't, you know, throwing darts at the wall fantasy football like some other teams play? Or could it be a little more aggressive Pittsburgh Steelers in the draft that say they could do the thing of trading out of pick 20, trading back, trading from 51 earlier to the second round because they want the regional guy in Frazier so much? Could those things actually happen, whereas maybe in the past they just wouldn't have taken those risks?
Yeah, I certainly think, you know, it's interesting. You know, they were talking today about specifically having pick 20 and how that's sort of a delineation point to where, you know, teams might want to move up. Like teams that pick early in the second round might want to move up to try to get an extra first round pick. And Mike pointed out that those are typically, like, when you get to 20 and on to 32, those are the playoff teams, right? I mean, those are the teams that have had successful seasons.
Sure.
So I think I view that as we're listening. That's how I viewed it. But I also view it as, look, I mean, you know, let's remember this offseason started with Art Rooney saying it's time to get some wins in the playoffs.
100%.
And you need really, really, really good football players to win in the playoffs. And I don't know, you know, and you're going to get better football players earlier in the draft historically than you are late. So I'm, you know, I think my guess is that I don't know if they're going to trade at a 20, but I would imagine they're going to try to move up in the second round and probably get a couple of earlier round picks. Because one thing from Kevin Colbert's tenure that I think sort of, you know, carries over to Omar's is Kevin said this maybe 2 or 3 years ago, when we pick a guy in the top in the first three rounds, we expect them to be starters. And I really think, you know, the Steelers are not looking for depth. They need difference makers. They need guys that can get on the field and play soon and play well. And so I believe they're going to be pretty aggressive. And when you look at, you know, Omar and Mike have taken, you know, Art's, you know, task mastering to heart here. I mean, like, hey he's,
yeah,
he knows better than anybody. They haven't won a playoff game since, you know, the 2016 playoffs. So he's, you know, he's not getting any younger. And I think that I don't want to say impatience, but I think they've sort of joined the modern NFL, for lack of a better phrase, during this offseason.
It does feel like that a little bit. that some of these moves, even if, again, they were low risk and fell in their lap, they're more modern NFL. They're fun for social media. They're fun for fans. They're fun for us to cover. That wouldn't have been the case a few years ago, at least the mindset of the Steelers. They just don't do these things. That was even the commentary nationally. And it does feel like maybe there's finally some sense of urgency on the Steelers, that when you finally hear Rooney say that, they're sick of getting in. Because even if they've been crawling in, and you crawl in, you play the Bills, everybody knew going in they didn't have a chance. I don't think the Steelers want to be in a situation where they get in the playoffs and everybody knows they don't have a chance. That's clearly not going to work. That's not going to be acceptable for anybody. So it does feel like there's a little sense of urgency now. Do you feel like the Deontay Johnson trade, and I know there was contract situations there, had a big deal, and not going to give him a second one, does that play into their draft strategy at all? They did hear comments from Tomlin about the receiver room. Sound like he kind of
trying to downplay it, and that
they're fine, but are they really, even if Pickens ascends?
Well, I think, you know, the reality is that, you know, there are the depth of talent at wide receiver, you know, seems to get better year by year.
That's true.
You know, I know there's a lot of chatter about, are they going to try to get a veteran guy instead? Are they going to try to trade a pick? And, you know, do they go after Brandon Ayuk? Do they go after, you know, one of Cortland Sutton, you know, the guy out in Denver? And I just, you know, if you're thinking long-term, the idea that the Steelers would trade for a veteran receiver and give him big time money when they have George Pickens, who, let's be honest, you know, is still maturing as a player and as a 22, 23 year old kid. Right.
Yeah.
And how is he going to react if they trade for a guy and make him the top dog? Cause they're not going to, like, let's just say like they trade for Ayuk, right. And they give him a new deal. Let's say, like, I don't know, three years, $75 million, whatever that is. Pickens is only on a 4-year deal because he was, you know, he wasn't a first round pick and he's entering the third year of that deal. Do you want to go into the offseason next year with George? They're not going to pay two receivers upwards of $25 to $30 million. They're not going to do it.
Yeah. And so, you know, Pickens is going to want that big deal.
Right. Go ahead. I'm more inclined to think that they're going to find their guy early in this draft. That would be my guess, that they're going to do what they can. Yeah. And that maybe includes giving up some draft capital to move up. And maybe they don't have picks, and, you know, they trade away a second or a third rounder next year to move up this year. I certainly think that to me makes more sense. That being said, I mean, look, you know, I think the idea that anybody has any real clarity on the Steeler way now with Omar and Andy Weidel running things, I don't think we're all kind of guessing. I mean, that's just look at the reporting. We have not been, and I'm as guilty as anybody. It's not as sharp as it used to be because these guys are more unpredictable, right? So, you know, maybe they, but if I'm analyzing the wide receiver room, somebody asked if George Pickens was ready to be a leader. And I'm like, I am not ready to go there. And I think, he and Deontay got along pretty well. You know, I think George is ready to be the top dog. I don't know if he's ready to be the leader, but I know he's ready to be the top dog. And I think the idea that they're going to go and keep bringing a vet to be that guy, like not an Allen Robinson type, not a role player type, but an actual one receiver. I don't see it.
Yeah. And I can't see Pickens being ready to be a leader yet. I guess to be fair to the situation, if he's ready to take a step and be an elite receiver or be a true wide receiver one, that could mean he's worth the money to them, even if he's not a leader. I mean, they paid those guys before. Getting a leader out of him is a different story, but then you probably are not bringing Ayuk in, obviously, because that could disrupt his comfort there. Maybe they're different styles. I've seen that brought up, but I think, as you're saying, regardless of styles, Pickens is going to see that as he's taking my money that I'm trying to get in the future. That could be a problem. I would imagine they would draft somebody as well. It'll be interesting what they can do, and it could very well be, if they want to get aggressive for, maybe because they believe Frazier will be gone and they want him, if they want to get this receiver early rounds, maybe they do end up with not much in the later rounds and they just stack the early rounds of the draft because that's where the guys are that they want. Will Gray is with the Associated Press, joining me here on Mic Drop with Believe, and available everywhere podcasts, and that includes some serious satellite stations. So thanks to them and also our sponsors here with Mic Drop. Well, I do want to ask you a little bit about Zach Frazier. I've obviously covered him, and there's been a long-standing love affair with how it's been reported, and even people in the know that have told me, between Mike Tomlin, the Steelers, and Frazier. It does not mean they're going to draft him. His stock has been rising despite recovering from an injury. I almost can guarantee they're not going to sit at 51 and take him like some did think 3 months ago. They have a lot of needs, though, whether they want to admit them or not, is what you're kind of alluding to there may force them to not get Frazier if they don't want to go pick 20, which seems early, and they got to work receivers, defensive line, tackle, lot to do. What have you been hearing about the Steelers and Frazier? Do you think that actually is going to happen, and what would be a scenario that would lead them there outside of them just getting lucky and he falls outside the top 50? Because there's almost nobody saying he would be outside the top 50, including people that are down on him. And that would be what they would need if they don't make a move.
I mean, do they like him well enough to give up a future draft pick for him? That part I don't know, because the reality is, you know, somebody's going to be there week one snapping the ball, right? Like, right. There's going to be a guy that's going to bend over and, you know, in front of Russell Wilson and snap the ball to him, hopefully more effectively than what they got from Mason Cole. And, sure. And the reality is, you know, the players that get teams over the top aren't necessarily centers, right? Like, they aren't. Like, they, right. The Steelers, you know, they need playmakers. They need dynamic offense. So, like, I, it seems to me, you know, I would, and look, tackles is another position where they're really, yeah. You know, they really would like to get somebody to bookend with Broderick Jones. You know, Dan Moore's been pretty good, but I mean, the long-term plan is they're looking for an upgrade, and that is a more important position in terms of protecting your quarterback's health than center is, right? So I don't think it's necessarily, if they don't get Zach Frazier, it's not because they don't want him, but in the pecking order of things that they need, like, would they love a plug-and-play center like they have with Maurkice Pouncey, a guy that they can take and just put him out there for the next 10 years and not worry about it? Of course they would. But, you know, you'd like to have that at left or right tackle too. It's more of a premium position. Fewer of those guys that are NFL capable. And this is actually a pretty deep center class by comparison. Yeah. So I don't think it's, you know, ride or die with, you know, but I wouldn't view them not picking him as any sort of, you know, view on how they view his talent, other than just the circumstances to where they're at when they're on the clock.
Yeah. It seems kind of an awkward situation for them. If they're really trying to get Frazier, that's why I keep writing and saying they would have to be aggressive and move, because pick 20 seems high for Frazier if he's number two on most people's boards for center. Powers Johnson may still be there. I would imagine they would take him over Frazier. But outside of that, then you have a lot, again, to do and a lot of needs that maybe are more immediate helps to you. Although Frazier, what people are saying, is an instant starter. He flat looked me in the eye at the combine and said, I'll learn a playbook. I'll teach it to a quarterback. I'll do it in 2 weeks. I'll know it more than the QB if he's young. That's a lot of confidence, and he's a very intelligent man. Those are comments that Mike Tomlin probably loves hearing, because that might be a situation they kind of need with a bunch of new QBs coming in. But again, how much are you in love? And I know, of course, it wouldn't be a slight to him. There are a lot of other teams interested in him as well. If somebody really falls in love, they're not going to go wild and punt the whole board here. This is a center, but it will be interesting. And if they do end up with Frazier, it almost kind of is, we're not sure of the Steelers' way now under Omar Khan. It's a little different. It's been kind of harder to read in recent months. That would be one of those that you could have read the tea leaves 5 months ago in the middle of West Virginia season. We were hearing things about that. So it would be interesting if they do end up with Frazier. Will Graves joining me here on Mic Drop as we just talked some Steelers in the draft. Right. We will see what happens. This is going to be a very telling draft maybe to the future of how this franchise operates. And we will also see how this roster looks and what they can do this coming season, as there finally is a little bit more of a sense of urgency from the top on down. Well, I do want to also ask you about the other team in town, another team that's been a while since winning a championship, but maybe more recent playoff success, although some could argue disappointing as well, and the Pittsburgh Penguins didn't get in back-to-back years, missing the postseason despite fighting there at the end of the year. Unlike past seasons, and really for the first time in two decades, they were sellers at the deadline and in trading Jake Guentzel. He's now going to be a part of things. He'll be an impact player to a team trying to make a run again. How would you evaluate the Penguins' season? It was a roller coaster ride. It's the end of some veterans. Crosby still played well. Malkin didn't give you Malkin of old, of course. And this team was out of it, made a trade, and then all of a sudden used that trade to ignite themselves and kind of got back into things. And hearing what Kyle Dubas said, it almost felt like that annoyed him a little bit, that I finally pulled the trigger on being a seller, and then you guys got in the race. And yeah, if we would have had Guentzel, maybe the Penguins, if speaking for Dubas, if they would have had Guentzel, we would have made the playoffs. They didn't. It didn't make sense to have him at that point, and they didn't end up making it. How would you evaluate the Penguins' season, though, overall?
Well, I sort of view it as, you know, not just this year, but last year. I mean, they've been a 500 team for 2 years now with 3 to 4 Hall of Famers on the roster, right? Yeah. They have not won a playoff series since 2018. That is an eon in hockey years. It's an eon, okay?
Yeah.
And
more talent than you could argue the Steelers squandered, if you're going to compare.
Yeah. I mean, but I think – You know, it's hard. These dynasties end. I mean, you know, it happened with the Blackhawks. It happened with the Kings. It happened with the Red Wings, where your core guys, you have a great run, and then it ends. And then the hard part is, and not everybody can act like the New England Patriots when they had Tom Brady. Not who they seem to know like a year before when they were out on a guy, right? And the Penguins have the opposite problem. They have guys that they love that are franchise icons and don't want to leave and have no trade clauses. And so it's very hard to kind of rework the roster around them when the guys that are the most valuable or make the most money, or in some cases both, don't want to go, when in reality, maybe their leaving would help the Penguins as an organization, you know, get younger and get better. So, they're in a tight spot. I mean, you know, Dubas and I give him, you know, Lars Eller, who is as much of a truth teller as I've ever met in a hockey room, said this year, he came over from the Caps and he's been around the block a bunch, and he would always call it like he sees it. And he said, look, we basically pouted after Jake got traded. We went into a funk. And then, you know, when Michael Bunting proved that he could be a player, when Gino's parents, I mean, I'm not even kidding. Like, when Gino's parents got here from Russia for the first time in 4 years, and he started to look like the vintage Malkin at the end of the year. Then they looked like the team they always thought they were. And, you know, Dubas, you know, basically called them out and said, look, you know, we've got to be more mature than that. And he's not talking about like the young guys on the team. He's talking about Tarik Pustinen.
That's how I heard it too.
And Gino and Letang.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you know, that's pretty, to me, that's pretty damning. If your boss is saying, you guys are in your late 30s and you're pouting because your buddy got traded, this is a business, you've been in it a long time, you know? So, you know, I will say this. You know, the more I do this, the longer I've been here since 2011, and writing sports for 25 years now, various places, various levels. Yeah. And the way that Sidney Crosby respects his own talent, respects himself, respects the game, the way he goes about his business, you know, you almost like want him to have that opportunity to get in the playoffs, and it is killing him. Now the question is it killing him enough to be on board with, if they come and say, hey, you know, we found somebody to trademark. We have found a place for Gino to go and have a golden parachute. We found, you know, a chance for Letang to go, but it will bring us younger players and make the whole better. Is he going to be on board with that? And let's remember, he's due for an extension, you know, this summer, July 1, I would imagine it gets done July 1 in 10 seconds, you know, 10 seconds after midnight. But, you know, they're in a tight spot, because, you know, as much as Dubas says he doesn't want them to have the dips that you've seen the Kings and the Red Wings, certainly, and the Blackhawks have been these extended down periods. He wants to avoid that. But it's hard if you can't give up the assets that kind of got you to those great heights in the first place.
Yeah, and that's the kicker that Penguin fans were dreading forever, but is very, very true and is inevitable. Especially the way the NHL has been over the last 20 years, certainly once they had the initial lockout of recent memory and they kind of put this cap in place, you can have a dynasty, you can max it out. Penguins have done so for sure with cups, but eventually it's going to come crashing down, and eventually you're going to have a dark period. Some are darker than others. We heard that the last week where the Red Wings were fighting with 3 straight overtime wins. Their fans were screaming, it's a little bit long for this rebuild. It shouldn't be 7 years with an historic franchise that had a dynasty. And I'm sure Dubas is going to say, yeah, we don't want to do 7 years. It's very, very long, and actually 8 now because they missed the playoffs again. But it's almost inevitable you're going to take 1 or 2, and maybe these are the last 2. But it also feels like they didn't hit that yet, because you still have this group together. Right. And who knows about what the roster will be in the future. I cannot imagine Crosby playing somewhere else either, no matter how much the national media wants to talk about it on shows to create clicks. I can't imagine it. But as you mentioned, does he really want to go for the cup one more time? And 4 would be a really elite number in sports, let alone the NHL. But it almost feels like with this roster, even if they get better and improve certain things, they're maxing out at maybe winning a series at best. Doesn't feel like the cup's happening again for him.
Right.
If he doesn't want to go elsewhere, Is that happening with this roster? He's going to have to make some real personal decisions if that does. We'll see. When he loves winning above everything else, even though, yes, he's been that unique superstar that has respected his superiors, even if he's more important than all of them and all of that that you love seeing. We will see about the future, though. And I actually like, too, and I'm sure you appreciate this, too, Kyle Dubas is very, very honest. His first offseason, kind of recapping, missing the playoffs again, this now kind of people are going to put it on him. He made the Gensel move. Players clearly in their feelings about it. Maybe there was issues there. And he just threw it right back and was very, very honest. I think as a fan or a media member, you got to appreciate honesty. I at least do. I know some people don't want to hear it, but.
Yeah. I mean, it is, you know, I will say it oddly though, like, you know, when you had Jim Rutherford there for so long with such great success, I mean, you know, measuring up to that level of candor, which, you know, JR was JR, but Kyle, you know, certainly, you know, he's got a 7-year deal. He's, you know, he understands that his job is not in trouble. That being said, I mean, look, the biggest questions they have to answer going into the offseason is what do you do with the goaltending? Because 100%. The guy you signed to a 5-year deal is, you know, you still don't know. He's going to be 28 years old, and you still don't know whether he's a playoff goalie, right? And the kind of guy that can steal a series, that can help you guys win a cup. I mean, he hasn't even won a playoff round yet. You know, I mean, it's that's
and
tough,
goalies
right?
can steal and goalies and can I'm steal curious, a series. You know,
right, and I wonder too, you know, and I've brought this up to our good friend and fellow WVU alum Rob Rossi. I mean, Mike Sullivan's a hell of a coach, but man, to go 6 years without winning a series, his new contract doesn't start till next season. You know, would I be in favor of making a change just to make a change? No, but in the reality is, in this instance, this might be one of the easier pieces to move because he doesn't have a no trade clause. Okay,
sure.
And he's still a highly coveted. He's still a highly coveted coach. So do I think? Look, do I think that he should be fired? No, but I mean, if you're looking to really shake things up, and let's be honest, I mean, as good a coach as he is, and likely going to the Hall of Fame, I mean, the Penguins fired coaches in the middle of seasons and won Stanley Cups. Okay, and he was one of the guys that they hired.
Yeah, I was
so,
going to say.
So let's not pretend.
Good.
Let's not pretend that job is as valuable as a Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin 100%. Prime, you know, Marc-Andre Fleury 100%. Prime player. It's not. 100%. But and sometimes just change can be good. Do I think he's going to be fired? No. But, you know, I really think – and the irony is because when you look at everybody that's in the playoffs now, you look at the Pens, do they look like they're that close? They don't look like they're that close.
No.
Okay, they don't. That doesn't mean that they can't get in and have a puncher's chance. I mean – but man, it's, you know, they've had 2 years of an injury-free Sidney Crosby and mostly injury-free of Evgeny Malkin. And they have not made the playoffs. And these guys are going to be at camp next year, and they're going to be 38 and 37 years old. And it's, I mean, this is not like they're going to the Hall of Fame. They are all-time greats. But the franchise is just in a really tough position that it's going to be hard to extricate itself from, no matter what, you know, what Kyle Dubas tells us or what he dangles in front of the players. It is a tight spot, and it's one every team navigates. And if he can somehow pull it off without, you know, bottoming out, then he would be, you know, as good as, you know, the Fenway Sports Group thought that they were going to be when they hired him.
Yeah. I mean, he was the guy they wanted. He's the guy that wants to do this. He wants this challenge in his career, but it's not going to be easy road. It's very, very hard to, you mentioned Jim Rutherford coming in after a couple years of maybe disappointing and underachieving when guys are still in their prime, the franchise is still in very much win now mode. That's an easier thing. Even if you're going to eventually be hated by how you leave by some compared to this, because now you're trying to reboot things, keep it going or decide to scrap it with guys at the tail end and a team that for 2 years now, anyone can see this with a naked eye. The reason why they don't appear close, even the teams that were on the fringe, even Detroit, who didn't get in, they all appear faster than the Penguins. You just cannot be the older, slow team and start out a season slow and then get in. And if you do get in, that's why you don't win around. The teams that are fast, that are aggressive, they're the ones that eventually advance, unless a goalie steals it. But as you just talked about, the goalie is not likely to steal it. who's on the roster right now. So we will see about the future of the Penguins. A lot of work for Tubas, to say the very, very least. And all dynasties do come to an end. As a fan, at least be happy they maximized what they could get out of it. And they were the top franchise the last 15 years, going back to multiple executives, multiple coaches, etc. And yeah, it's been a while for Sullivan. He has the two cups, but maybe this is also part of when you win so much early on, the perception ends up this way at the end, because very few get to leave on their own accord, especially coaches in the NHL. They seem to be fired as often as people change their underwear, more so than any other sport, but it hasn't affected Sullivan just yet. Will, I do appreciate the time. I know you have to go. I just want to get you out of here on this, because you've covered a lot of baseball and I'm a baseball guy. I do want to ask you about the Pirates. They've been struggling recently, just lost again the night before we're recording this. They started out hot to the first couple weeks of the season. They're now back to 500. People are freaking out. I think they read into too much of those first couple weeks. How do you read the first few weeks of this Pirates season? What are you expecting moving on? And are you at all surprised that they're kind of back to the mean of struggling, or where are you on the Pirates here early on still in April?
Well, I mean, the schedule was pretty user
mostly, yes,
friendly early in terms of the teams they were playing. I mean,
maybe not
with the Marlins and the Nats. That's a pretty, you know, it's a pretty good place to start. I feel pretty confident in saying the Pirates are in a better place than those teams. You know, sure, they like scrappy series in Philly, you know, against a really good team that's built to win now. You know, the hitting has tailed off considerably. And the irony is, like, we were all worried about the starting pitching. Starting pitching's actually been pretty good even without Paul Skeens. And I mean, Jared Jones has been as hot as he has come out. And, you know, to be honest with you, like, you know, the weird part is people are, you know, obviously there's a lot of clamoring for Skeens to get up here, for Skeens he's mowing down people at AAA. But like, if you trust what the Pirates' plan was for Jared Jones, which certainly appears to be working, even if I will tell you one little story. So Jared got pulled last week in his start against Mets after five innings, 59 pitches, 50 of them strikes. I saw Steve Blass when I was covering the series last weekend, and I said, Steve, how you doing? And he brought Jared Jones up and he volunteered it. And I said, Steve, in your whole life, did you ever get pulled after 59 pitches when you had it going? And he said, well, we didn't even count. We didn't even count.
There it is. Yeah. I imagine.
And, you know, like, well, obviously the game has changed. You know, and to be honest with you, I mean, like, the reality is these guys are throwing harder, and they're throwing with more spin than any group of pitchers that have ever come up. And I talked to somebody in the organization. There's obviously a lot of concern about arm injuries. I asked this person about the clock, if they think the clock, like the players union says, is playing a factor in it. And he goes, look, if you're, you know, it's about fatigue and like that extra 10 to 15 seconds of rest that they were getting earlier, you know, in between pitches, now they're not. And if you do that 70, 80, 90 times a game, you know, that means that they're getting that much more, they're getting that much more taxed, right? So yeah, he didn't. Now, the owner stressed, this person did not blame the injuries on the clock specifically. It's more of a, you know, one factor of a lot of different things. The Pirates want Skeens to, you know, people are talking about the Super 2 stuff. I would point out that, like, you know, they want to avoid that fourth year of arbitration so they can save some money.
Sure.
I would point out that Gerrit Cole made his, you know, major league debut on June 10th or June 11th, okay,
100%
in 2013. Yep. And that worked out just fine for him, and that worked just fine for the Pirates. And that was a different leadership group.
Yeah.
But I do think, like, if you're going to sit there and praise them for the way they've handled and developed Jared Jones, and you have to trust that they know what they're doing with Skeens. And I think the division is such that nobody's going to – Milwaukee's is ahead now as they come to Pittsburgh for a series, but – you know, I mean, Arizona got in the playoffs, what, 85 wins last year and made it to the World Series, right? So let's not freak out. But I do think, you know, the optimism was probably clouded a little bit by, you know, the fact that they were hitting really bad pitching and playing teams that weren't particularly good. The Bednar stuff is concerning. You know, Chapman, you know, he's getting suspended for, you know, making inappropriate gestures. Like, there are certainly concerns. The hitting is the biggest problem. I mean, they're trying to, you know, O'Neill Cruz is, they got him. He was supposed to be, you know, they want to bat him lead off. He's hitting eighth, you know, like it's tough. I do think the batting will come around, But, you know, I think they're a middling team. I don't think this is the breakthrough year that people thought they were going to see. And, but I think I would be more concerned. How does Jones develop? When do Skeens get here? What do they look like? And that, to me, everything else outside of that, does O'Neill Cruz, you know, fully healthy after missing all of last year? What does he look like in August and September? I'm still thinking about 25 and 26. But, yes, I mean, I think it's reasonable in a mediocre division to expect them to be at least be interesting for a few months. And I think that is probably pretty reasonable. And they've got tradable assets like Martin Perez that they can flip, you know, if it gets sideways at the deadline.
Yeah, a lot of fans seemingly were thinking this would be the 2013 equivalent. It feels like we're a year or two away from that. But yeah, interesting is key. They got to be interesting going into August or something like that. But there's a lot of questions to answer that were probably being masked by a couple bad teams they were facing to open up the season, even though they did also impress against the Orioles. Will, I appreciate the time. Certainly be talking to you again sometime soon, I'm sure. And I will. And let me know if any of my students hit you up, as they should. So
happy to do it, kids. Find me on X. I'm happy to talk about this. I love it. Like I said, I'm gonna need a job in 10 years, and I need these kids to hire me. So I don't do video though. I don't shoot video. I handle the words, guys. That's my resume. I handle the words. Yeah.
He did tell the kids he will not do a TikTok. So we cannot see Will Graves doing a TikTok. The only thing in his career he will not knock out. But no. Will, I appreciate the time, man.
I'm too old for that. Now, trust me, my teenage kids would tell you that. All right, Mike, appreciate it.
Yep. Will Graves from the AP. I just had a beer and lunch with him last week as he talked to my class. So it was great to reconnect with him there as well for this show. So you guys can hear the takes from Will Graves, long tenure colleague of mine. I do think this is a more aggressive Pittsburgh Steelers room of brass than we've seen in a while. Makes it more interesting. That's the key word here mentioned about the Pirates. You want it to be interesting if you're a fan or even a media member. The Steelers are more interesting now. They've been more interesting throughout this offseason. They're willing to shake things up, even if it's low-risk moves off the Wilson contract and Fields ending up being not for the first or second-round pick that people thought maybe it would have been months earlier. Would they have made a move for Fields for a first-round pick? No. Would they have paid Russell Wilson $40 million of their own money rather than the Broncos taking on most of that because of that situation? No. But reality is they were willing to shake up the room. Kenny Pickett pouted, issues there. He didn't progress enough. They were willing to putter on with Kenny Pickett as he hadn't progressed enough. But then again, the pouting and different things that Will and I have both reported on, and I know Will has talked about this before in other shows and on social media. That didn't work out. They then change it up. They're not unwilling to shake things up now that maybe they would have been in years past. Makes the Steelers interesting in the offseason. Sense of urgency to finally win a playoff game, not just get in, not just crawl in, not just 9-10 wins, to actually have a chance to be a contender, still in the midst of a dynasty in their conference in the Chiefs, but a wide-open division, of course. Burrow will be back. He'll be healthier, but the Bengals still have some question marks. The Browns got a QB issue still for sure. We'll see about them in the future. How far can the defense really carry you? The Ravens, very, very good. Will they get over the hump? Obviously the class of the division in recent years. But the Steelers, if they get enough quarterback play and you figure the quarterback play will be better than it's been, 13 TDs from Kenny Pickett and even Russell Wilson, as bad as he was getting you into the late 20s last year. Even if he reverts back to 2 years ago, still you could argue with Kenny Pickett the last 2 years. Not saying that'll help them, but and they'll be good enough if that happens, but if they get improved quarterback play, you feel like they would have more of a chance and they have opportunities in this draft to also make moves for now and the future. The Penguins will be interesting, maybe eventually for negative reasons, because they're going to take a dip. There will be dip years. There'll be problem years, just like there were or the Blackhawks, the Red Wings in particular, the Kings, etc. You don't want to be a 7-8 year journey, almost a decade with multiple regimes and executives and bringing in a favored son to try to fix things and Steve Yzerman. You don't want that to be the case for the Penguins. It could be. Wouldn't be shocking. That's how the system's built right now. Certainly could be. Crosby's not even going to play forever. And once he's gone, you're going to get there. Maybe you will have X generation again. You hope, and with Kyle Dubas, as young as he is, as good as he's been, as hungry as he is, as modern thinking as he is, you feel like it'll avoid that trajectory. But it'll at least be 1 or 2 years. And you also got to figure they're not hitting that yet because they still have Crosby playing at a high level. They missed these two playoffs, but this roster is still off of mostly the older core, certainly the Hall of Famers of Letang, Malkin, and Crosby, from that run for so long. The real true test of moving on, Malkin, Letang, others, you're bringing Eric Carlson, that's a win-now move. That didn't work, clearly. He also had a rough final 2 weeks and some plays that were rough, even though he had a game winner. What do you do for the immediacy if you're still trying to contend with Crosby? Because Crosby on the roster, despite I can't see him playing anywhere else, is not going to sit back and say to you, go ahead and rebuild. We don't want to do 7 years like the Red Wings. I'm willing to miss the playoffs again as you figure things out for 1 or 2 years. I'll retire, and then maybe then you'll be better suited to have a quicker rebuild. Crosby's not taken an L for the last few years of his career. He's going to want to still be a contender and make another run at a cup. If that's the mentality, you got to make win-now moves while trying to rebuild. That'll be interesting how Kyle Dubas can try to get that done and if he can have success in getting that done when others also successful name recognition executives have failed on trying to get that done elsewhere. And then, of course, the Pirates. I do think people read in way too much into those first couple of series of the season. They were against bad teams. A lot of question marks around Cruz. The bullpen, of course, with Bednar, if he can ever get back going. I do think he was hurt when he had his slump. Chapman, who has the history in the postseason of getting it done, but also has a personality issue maybe, and it led to a suspension. Pitching has been better than people would have thought. Does that mean you rush Skeens? Does it mean you don't rush Skeens? Is that because of money or not? As Will touched on, they didn't do it for money in the past, and it worked out. Then they also did wait for money in the past, and it worked out. It's a different regime. We'll see what happens with Skeens and when he is up here in Pittsburgh and how that works out. You feel like he'll at least, pitchers like that usually do well from the start, but are they interesting enough at that point? Do they totally fade? Does that make your decision easier? Ke'Bryan Hayes, players like that, do they ever truly become the star of the team? This team feels like it needs someone to grab the bull by the horns as the star player of the era. Who is that? When does it happen? Does the rest of the rotation continue on pitching well? Does the team get enough offense? Because ever since Bednar struggled, other players saying, don't boo us. The fans were kind of getting frustrated even with the hometown kid in Bednar. The offense completely has cratered and has struggled. And if that continues, it's going to make it harder on the rotation. It's going to make it harder on relievers. It's going to make it harder on everybody. And maybe these decisions won't happen to what you want them because the team is no longer interesting or not interesting as long. And I do not believe 2024 is the 2013 breakthrough year. I do think it's 1 or 2 years away. I do think they're headed in the right direction. And I do think they'll be interesting at least further into July. Will they be interesting in August? I don't think so. Will they be a contender? Will they be a playoff team? I don't think so. It's not murderer's row in the division, though. It is more wide open than it even would have been going into 2013 at that time. We will see. I do believe this is more of a regime that does want to win, even if you don't believe the ownership does. Maybe the right guys are in place there and the farm is solid, but you're expecting a pennant like the Diamondbacks put together despite only 80 some wins right away this year in this magic carpet ride of a season with Skeens coming up midway through. That I don't think is happening. That I think you're several years away from even really being a winning team and a contender, probably several years away from. But yes, head in the right direction. How much more do you want to hear that? I'm sure not much more. This should be a year where you're at least interesting, though. Anything shy of at least 75, 80 wins this year and being interesting going into middle of July, end of July, early August would be a disappointment. This ends up being a 60-win team, 60-some win team, as early 70-win team. That then tells you they got to take a step and what are they doing. All of that will be interesting to follow throughout the rest of the summer, especially when they own the calendar, because the Penguins, they're getting into the doldrums here. The Steelers, they're going to go through a draft. They'll go through rookie minicamp. People will absorb it. People will comment on it. And then there'll be a lull before training camp. Once training camp booms, if the Pirates are well out of it, no one's going to care. If the Pirates are a contender, we'll see how the fans react. Obviously still caring about the Steelers, but do they keep going to games, keep engaging, keep wanting conversation about the Pirates, and what do the ratings numbers say on TV? If the Pirates are well out of it, it's an easier call for all those people. And even the most avid Pirate fan will tail off, even if they don't care about the Steelers, because I know there's some of those out there. So that's a bar, being interested in going into August, going into late July, really. Once the Steelers get back into things and training camp starts, are you interesting enough to show everybody, pessimistic or optimistic, you are taking a step forward, and to make it clear you can be a contender soon, and there's reason for people to follow you and to care about you, to be a team that is on the radar of the market. If you're 10 out, you're looking at 60 plus, 70 wins at the most. Skeens isn't working out. The offense is still puttering. The bullpen still looks to be a mess for the first time in a while. And all these questions are still there lingering, and your team has not won and has lost to some bad teams, even after beating some bad teams to open up the year. All of that then will go away, and it'll be more of same old Pirates, even if that's not fair to the current regime. We will see. All of that, though, will be very interesting to follow throughout the weeks and months from here on out. Again, I want to thank Will Graves with the Associated Press for joining me here on this episode of Mic Drop. Of course, I'm Mike Ostie, and this and every episode of Mic Drop is available everywhere you get your podcasts. Of course, powered by the Believe Network, available there on the main page and also available on any of the Sirius satellite channels that do carry Believe shows, including this one, Mic Drop, here covering the Pittsburgh market and beyond.